Welcome to Relevant Parties by Carhartt Work in Progress. I'm Chelle Ravens, and in this series, I'm going behind the scenes at some of the world's best independent record labels to meet the visionaries and the obsessives who've made musical history. In each episode, we sit down with one of these label founders to find out what makes them tick. We hear the tall tales and big ideas behind some of the most influential records and scenes of the past 30 years, and maybe try to work out just what possessed them to take on one of the most challenging jobs in the music industry. So far on Relevant Parties, I've been finding out about labels from Europe and North America. And for reasons both cultural and geographical, those labels are in closer conversation with each other. They tend to speak the same language, figuratively at least. But this time, we're meeting the co-founder of a record label from a very different musical culture and a different language. Tara Keeson is one of the people behind Tokyo's Jazzy Sport, a label, a store, and occasionally a holiday company, launched in 2003 in Shibuya. It turns out Tara got his first big clubbing experiences in my own city of London, where he discovered acid house and pirate radio in the early 90s. But he entered the music biz properly through a job at the pioneering Japanese hip-hop label File Records. When he moved on to launch Jazzy Sport, it didn't take long to establish the label as one of the most important hubs of a burgeoning hip-hop culture in Japan, taking influence from that particular theme of vinyl-worshipping, sample-digging beat culture that hails Dilla and Madlib as kings. There are a few artists who are especially closely tied to the label, including the hip-hop group Gaggle and their breakout DJ Mitsu the Beats, veteran selector and super versatile dance producer Grooveman Spot, and the members of acid jazz ensemble Cro-Magnon, one of whom even released a stunning jazz piano album on the label recently. So although its roots are in hip-hop, it's an eclectic portal for all kinds of music. And as well as the label and several bricks and mortar stores, Jazzy Sport has branched out into physical recreation too, with regular skiing trips and even climbing competitions. Sadly, my Japanese is pretty limited, but Taro has stepped up to the plate to tell the Jazzy Sport story in English. Before we started talking, he mentioned that he hated hearing his own voice on tape, which is something I think a lot of us can sympathise with, and he even asked if he could put a Darth Vader effect on his. Now, we haven't done that, obviously, but this is definitely one of those conversations that it was at high risk of getting lost in translation. Given the language barrier and the physical distance, I think he's smashed it. Hi, Taro. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
And tell me, where are you today, Taro?
Tokyo, Meguro World.
And is that close to where the Jazzy Sport shop would be?
I can walk from my home to the office and shop. Just a one stop, I walk.
Oh, right. That's not too bad. So tell me about how 2020 has worked out for you then. It's been such a strange year.
Indeed.
How has coronavirus affected you and the label?
Not so much event going on because it's banded and it's really hard to... People tend to not to going out and gathering in a small underground dark places with a packing many people. So it's really terrible. Feel the fear of the, you know, throwing the event and the do DJing and the gathering people. So it's a lot of effects, bad effects for the event itself. Mm. But all the artists we taking care, they kind of try to survive without DJing and just make money releasing their music.
Mm. And are the Jazzy Sport shops actually open again now?
We closed once when the government said really hard things around April, early May. We closed a little while and then we reopened after that and never closed down again.
Okay. How many stores are there at the moment? Because I know that you, at one point there was a store in Hong Kong, right? Is that still there?
That was wrong. And we never opened up a shop in Hong Kong.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Korea, Seoul Town, Seoul City.
Oh, okay.
Once, a long time before, and it's been closing a long time. Just, we have a friend, musical friend in Seoul, in Korea.
Mm-hmm.
He invited us a lot for a gig in Seoul, and he decided to open a little shop, and then he could speak Japanese too.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And he started teaching Korean people Japanese, like a tuition in there a little bit. And he dealing with just few records from us and teach apparel things. It's been like only a few years, you know, less than a few years.
Okay. So it was like a language school and a record shop at the same time.
Yeah. You know, Korean people, I mean, I guess they open up quick, and if it's not good, it's not going well, they're closing quickly.
Right. In the UK, especially recently, it's become really difficult to run a record store. Yeah. And a lot of the classic London stores have definitely closed down in the last decade.
Yeah,
sure. I guess that's partly because a lot of people are streaming music instead of buying it, but also because it's so expensive to rent a building. Mm. How does that compare in Japan? How easy is it to keep a record store running in the city?
It's kind of same as in London.
Right.
Yeah, people, especially young people, tend to do streaming things or subscription. That's easier, and that they don't have money, you know. And then in Japan, and I mean Tokyo, rent is high, like London town, but all records, like a second hand, you can only find a record store. So there's some record shops still survive.
Mm-hmm. Do you sell any second hand records in the shop?
Yeah, some. Yeah, we used to sell a lot more, but now new stuff and some stockies.
Because it used to be the case, I think, that Japan was a really big market for physical records, especially CDs, even when other countries had kind of stopped selling so many of them. Mm. So I wondered if that was still the case, that people are buying physical records. But do you think that younger people have actually moved into streaming now?
Maybe? I guess so. Yeah, CD we still sell. It's like a Galapagos, you know. We're still selling the CD in Japan because of we have... still got Tower Records.
Oh, yeah, Tower Records.
Yeah, nationwide.
Wow, yeah.
Even American Tower Records closing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah.
Then we still sell maybe for them, you know? And it's going smaller soon, I guess.
Right. What about you? Do you still collect CDs?
No.
Really?
Only vinyl. Old music with the vinyl, and new stuff with some records and digitals. So I do DJ, so I need new things.
Because do you DJ with both? Do you DJ with digital and vinyl?
Yeah, both. We carry a USB with the digital music. The vinyl is easy to handle all the time. We carry both, but I mainly use vinyl if I carry both.
Mm-hmm. So in recent years, I've definitely heard quite a lot about the culture of listening bars and kind of audiophile bars in Japan. It's something that I think a lot of people over here are really fascinated by. Oh, I wanted to know what the Jazzy Sports stores are actually like. And are they anything like a listening bar? Like, is it somewhere that you could go to, like, hang out and have a drink and listen to music? Is that kind of the vibe?
We don't do such listening bar kind of things in Jazzy Sports shops. Sometimes we do an in-store event, not for the listening bar.
But it is the kind of place, because it's open late, right? So I guess it must be the kind of place where people hang out and meet each other?
Yeah. Sometimes, but we used to sell alcohol too.
Oh, right.
Yeah, rip people off the money, you know? But not now, you know, before. When we used to have a shop in Shibuya, not now. We moved out.
And why did you leave Shibuya?
Because of lots of record shops closing down. Because Shibuya was a kind of Guinness Records number of record shops back then.
Oh, right. There were too many.
So small secondhand shop in a mansion, tower mansion kind of things. And lots of record shop out there. But that was. And then we feared it. And we should move out other place to do our own things. And a listening bar, I can recommend it to you. It's my friend running. They opened last year. It's called Counter Bar. And they do some...
Counter Bar?
Yeah, it's in Shimokitazawa, where we have a shop, another shop, newest Jazzy Sports shop.
What kind of music do they play in Counter Bar?
I don't know. Kind of event every day.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have a dance floor, just a counter.
Yeah.
Big counter. That's why they call it counter. But,
oh, right.
Yeah. And then, yeah, some people dance in the tiny places. But, yeah, they do related dance music, basically, I guess. R&B and hip-hop, down-tempo, twisted, and many.
I think there have been a couple of places in London that have attempted to be a bit like a Japanese listening bar, but I don't really think it... I don't know if it works quite. I don't know if people pay enough attention to the music here.
They use it as a pub.
Exactly. Everyone's just
thing,
talking.
You know, I like pub.
I mean, I like the pub too, but you see, the novelty of a listening bar.
Same thing, you know?
Yeah, okay.
They drink a lot, that's it.
Okay, so let's go to the beginning of the Jazzy Sport label. Can you tell me a little bit about how the label started, and were you involved right from the beginning?
Yeah, I was kind of one of the founder. Me and the other partner called Masaya Fantagista, he's kind of famous in the underground. And we used to work for another independent label in Tokyo. I've been there like 8 years, and then Masaya came after graduated university, and then he quit or got fired in three years. And then we hung out together a lot because of our taste, musical taste is similar. So we become a good friend, not just like a co-workers. And then I could still continue to the work in the same label, but it was kind of boring. It was underground label too.
And what was the other label?
My ex-label called File Records, F-I-L-E.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If you dig it, they are famous. Mm-hmm. They're huge too. And they're dealing with fast Japanese hip-hop music back then. It's underground. And also, you know, have you heard about the Major Force?
Yeah.
Yeah, Major Force, they distributing. So that's why I know the Five Records.
Right.
From the kids, and I dream about work there too.
Oh, I see.
Because
so is
of
this...
Major Force. Major Force was big.
Because of Major Force, right.
Yeah, because beginning of the Japanese hip-hop, and then they go tour overseas and DJing, the fast DJ culture.
And so is this like the mid-90s?
For the Major Force?
Well, when you were at File?
I started work there for 95.
Mm-hmm.
And 8 years, so I'm 20. Yeah, and 8 years.
So that was quite an exciting time for hip-hop and for Japanese hip-hop as well. So then tell me a bit about what your vision for Jazzy Sport was. How did you want it to be kind of different, or why did you think you needed like a new project?
Yeah, so I go back a little bit, you know, and I quit. And then me, Masaya, start talking about put up the new label and put out the music what we like, and we both hate our boss. that's the main reason, you know.
That's the main reason. That's a good reason.
We really hate, and then we can't stand. So then we start talking about, because we both really into, you know, Slum Village.
Slum Village, yeah, okay.
Yeah, we really like Slum Village back then. So that's common interesting between me and Masaya. So we should start a new label without that boss, you know.
Well, tell me a bit more about your vision for the label then, because so Slum Village as a kind of shared taste, definitely yeah. that's clearly like the groundwork for the label in so many ways, Dilla and that kind of MPC type of hip hop style. But what else though? Because I feel like you must have had some interest in kind of dance music and soul and house and stuff. Was that there at the same time, or did that kind of come separately?
At the same time, simply. Mm. Yeah, I into house and dance music too, and R&B a little bit, but I like instrumental.
Mm.
So I also do housey DJs and hip hop. We love both, so.
Yeah, okay. So you didn't really see a separation between them necessarily?
No, not at all. Because of, when I was a kid, like 18 years, 18 years old. In Tokyo, the club was so small. It's like a bar. And then they spin both sides, hip-hop and house.
Yeah.
It's hard to get the vinyl. It's really underground things. But I was really into that kind of things. And after that, I've been to UK. I'm in London for studying English and music, and buy lots of records and going clubbing, and that was big influence. Early 90s, big rave era.
Okay, so you were in London in the early 90s, so you were here for that kind of big kind of house explosion here then.
Yeah. Taking ecstasy and acid and all that.
What kind of club nights did you go to in London in the 90s?
London, it's called a Crazy Club and Heaven.
Heaven.
Rage. Fabio and Groove Rider.
Rage, yeah, okay, great.
Yeah, that's a legend, yeah. And I really into Pirate Station too, which we don't have in Tokyo.
Really?
No.
Has that never been something that Japan has had, Pirate Radio?
No. So Pirate Radio was fun for me, you know.
Yeah.
Where you live. Different tiny station, you know, you can't catch. So I always taped Pirate Station and go into the record shop, let them listen to buy records, because they speak so slang, you know.
Oh, good, yeah.
And then it's hard to catch the artist name and title, and I let them, the shop assistant, listen.
Yeah, it's hard enough to hear it if you speak English really well, I think. The accents are quite strong. So at that time then, were you already starting to DJ and things, or were you just a listener then?
I was DJing, but not famous, not really, really famous.
Friends
and parties.
Yeah. So then I guess when you came back to Japan, was there much of a scene for that kind of music, or was hip-hop hip-hop or house making a big impact at that point? I imagine house was, but I don't really know. When did that really arrive in Japan?
Rave came after maybe 5 years after I came back.
Okay.
It was time differences. Some underground club dealing with hardcore house or maybe jungle, but only few.
Right.
And then in Tokyo, there's an influence from New York and UK. So New York house was big, but much more than rave, you know.
And when you first started Jazzy Sport then, so you had the kind of Slum Village influence, but were there any labels that you were inspired by when you started?
Stone Throw was the one.
Really?
Yeah, but they weren't that much big, not like now.
No, they would have been quite new then, really.
Yes, so that was kind of inspirational. Everybody can do DIY kind of things. And then we started label with a record shop too.
So they started at the same time, the shop and the label?
Yeah. Okay. We hunting down, headhunting the buyers. Our friends, you know, our record shop, we often go to buy new records, and then we start talking about, oh, we're going to do some record label, and they're sick and tired, and their shops and easy to headhunting. We headhunt two important buyers from in Shibuya.
Some
records and the Guinness records, and then we talk about shops and invest for the shops, making the shops.
Okay. So you found the best record buyers and got them to work for you instead, so that you'd have all the best stuff. Yeah, okay. And were you putting on any parties at that kind of time?
We did. Each of them doing DJ, and they have their own connection and their own tiny parties. Sometimes we all together. And then one party kind of famous was Jazz Cats. Yeah, that was in the hotel ballroom, the bi-monthly. And then our friend Bebop Jazz Dancers always come through. They organized that one. And then we mainly do DJ. And that was kind of big. And then lots of ladies came through. That was hotel ballroom. That was important. That's a jazz club too.
Oh, it is a jazz club, right.
Yeah. The hotel got jazz live house, mm-hmm. for the weekend, late night, they don't have nothing. So
right, yeah. And so at that point then, like how popular was hip hop in Japan? Or like, were you doing something that was quite unusual? Like, was it just you guys who were putting on this particular type of hip hop?
Popular. That everybody know the term of hip hop and all the imports and domestic both sides, so on.
Yeah.
But they don't mingle well, you know.
Why is that?
They feel like they sound strange, you know. I don't know. I love Japanese hip hop too, but not for my DJing.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So there's something about it that you don't, for some reason, you don't want to dance to it as much, or it doesn't seem to tick the box.
Do you play Japanese hip hop back in the day, in that era? People, like a floor creator.
The floor clears.
But not now. It's really big now.
Right, okay, so it's different now.
Yeah. It's huge.
I'd like to know about the sport part of the label, though. Can you tell me a bit about this? Because from what I've gathered over the years, you have had a football team and you organize like sporting activities, like skiing even. tell me what this is all about. When did that start?
That was because me and my partner Masaya into sports a lot, and we like football too. And we used to have a football team for not football, like, you know, futsal, five-a-side.
Oh, five-a-side, yeah, futsal, yeah,
more
great,
technical,
okay.
Skillful.
Yeah, oh, much more skillful.
And then, yeah, we used to do that in after work. Every week, once a week, after midnight, like 12 to 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, wow.
And then look, we gather some kind of DJ or musical friend. Even DJ from overseas, like Lefto and Shinbad, those guys too. And then one time we did attempt to the Adidas Cup.
Oh, yeah.
We won. And then been to Berlin and then joined the competition when the World Cup was happened.
Oh, wow.
And then we were the second in the world at the Cup. That was one famous story about our football team.
Okay, so you're actually pretty good then.
Yeah, we still do a football too, but more, not like a jazzy sport team, you know.
Oh, okay. So there's not an official jazzy sport team
no,
anymore.
No.
What about skiing? Is it true that you used to organize skiing trips?
In that sense, yeah. Because we have a regular big indoor festival.
Oh, yeah.
In Appy Jazzy Sport. It's called Appy Jazzy Sport. It's mm-hmm. happening every January. It's up north in Japan, and we do a hotel ballroom festival, musical festival on a Saturday night. And then we stay there a little while, and in the daytime we ski and snowboarding.
Right. That sounds like a fun festival.
Yeah, it's kind of big. We've been doing this 12 years this year.
Oh, wow.
So lots of local people coming through to say hello, and, you know, it's like a New Year gathering for them.
Yeah, yeah.
It's happening in Iwate Prefecture. If you Google it, you know where it is. It's really up north.
Up north, right, yeah. So are you a snowboarder or a skier?
Skier.
Are you?
Yeah, we produce collaborating ski itself too with a Japanese domestic brand called Vector Glide.
You produced skis, like actual skis?
Yeah. You can check VectorGlide.com, and there's three different types of Jazzy Sport, Vector Glide collaboration, ski.
Nice.
Producing just designs of a graphic of top sheet.
Cool, yeah.
Mm. And then we sell some too.
What about any other sports? Have there been any other teams? Or is it just the football and the skiing?
Climbing. Yeah, we actually run in a bouldering gym too.
Oh, wow.
In Iwate, the same area where we have a winter festival every year.
Oh, cool. This is very trendy now. Lots of people are doing climbing. I've never done it.
Yeah, you should do it.
Is this the recent sport and the most recent addition?
Demo British, and also we get really involved with the climbing things, like competition.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because we did a World Cup last year, like 1 week or something for DJing for them while they compete. And we are one of the most important DJs for the competition for the clients. Oh, wow. You know the brand called North Face?
Yeah.
Every year they do organize a North Face Cup nationwide, and then final. So we do every competition nationwide, and then final, big final coming in February, and then we also do DJing for them.
Wow. Okay. So what? So while people are climbing, you're playing music in the background as well.
Yeah.
That. Oh, great.
Without sound, it's like a funeral. Yeah, it is. We tried once. Because the organizer said they, when the final stopped music, it's like really quiet, like a really hardcore underground martial arts fighting kind of thing. But every city, in every country got the music background of the for the climbing competition, I say. Mm, especially in Europe, they're big. It's like a festival almost.
Yeah, it's super popular now, isn't it?
Mm. So climbing is one thing because of the, you know, Olympic Games.
Mm-hmm.
So 2020 Tokyo Olympic Games, including climbing, sports climbing as a new game.
Oh, it was going to be a new game, wasn't it?
Yeah, like same as in skateboarding.
Yeah. What are they going to do with it then? Is it going to happen next year?
I don't think so.
You don't think so? Wow.
I hate Olympics.
Why?
Why?
It's yeah.
Because of they losing their original concept, you know, just for the money now. Big
yeah.
party, you know, big brothers thing.
Yeah, and it costs the city so much to do
yeah,
it. I mean,
when you had an Olympic game in London, you happy?
When it happened, I did love it. Like, I thought it was amazing for the 2 weeks that it was happening. But before that, it costs so much money.
Yeah.
It costs so much money. And now it's just, I mean, it's a cool part of London, but they're not using the venues very well. They're just, most of them, they're empty.
That's not
it's a lot of money to spend. No, exactly.
Yeah. So some people get money for those and then some people don't. That's why.
Okay, let's talk about some of the artists who featured on the label a lot. I wanted to mention DJ Mitsu, The Beats. And he's also part of the hip-hop trio called... So are they called Gaggle or Gaggle?
Yeah, Gaggle.
Gaggle, yeah. So Mitsu has been making music for like years and years and years, like at least 20 years, I would reckon. So when did you meet him and why did he become part of Jazzy Sport? I mean, his sound makes so much sense with what you're doing, but did you already know him at the beginning of Jazzy Sport?
Yeah, because that was a story when we had started Jazzy Sport, because that my ex-label, I told you.
File, yeah.
I let them debut from the File record I picked them up and...
Oh, you were an A&R?
Yeah, for them.
Uh-huh.
And then I made them debut.
I see.
They sent a demo to the File Records and that was really, really good quality on a cassette tape. So I fried to them. They're from up north too. So I talked them and then they're going to have a gig soon in Akita City. So I fried there. I saw them. And then we talked, and then they were good. So I made them debut on Fire Records. Then we talked Fire Records and set up a new label. If you want, come together. We invite them to do new things on a Jazzy Sport. So
yeah.
Mitsu was an incredible beatmaker. That was so. Maybe we can start with his album. Own album, international album. I mean, not Japanese hip hop, like featuring many artists from overseas. And that was one of the milestones of the Jazzy Sport. The reason why we started Jazzy Sport too.
Oh, really? Yeah, okay. So it was kind of discovering Gaggle that made you think that you wanted to run a label that was kind of like that and to release music as good as that. And how have they kind of developed over the years? Because I guess then you've kind of grown at the same time. Like, how has your kind of relationship grown over the years, or their vision for music?
So through the music, my ex-label, I already got some connection with overseas artists and pioneer factories. I know how to deal with producing music and put out. That was when we don't have internet like right now, you know.
Yeah.
Not just a CD and vinyls, that's it.
Yeah.
Maybe data is only for a few people. And so I was good at putting music through the experience, 8 years for 5 records. So that was easy for me in the underground way.
I read an article about the hip-hop scene in Japan, and it was interesting. There were some rappers and artists in this article who were foreign, they were from overseas, and they felt that it was hard to become part of the hip-hop scene in Japan, even though they'd been living in Japan a long time. But so then, do you see yourself as part of the Japanese scene, or are you actually, in a sense, more international? Like, where do you see yourselves?
We do it as international. We do it as internationally, we think. We try to, because get an audience from the overseas is much more easier. Through the internet, you know, we can get more audience. They like our music, you know, not just Japan. Japan is maybe only 2,000 people. They listen to our music, maybe.
Yeah.
Through the internet, we can get much more from the States and Euro and other territories. So,
have you found that over the years, as the internet has improved people's connections with each other, and as SoundCloud and Bandcamp have come along and Discogs, have you found that over the years it's actually been easier then to get that international audience and to kind of cultivate an international fan base?
I think so. Before that, we, doing a tour, and because we were invited US and London Euro as a DJ. So maybe we get, before Bandcamp or SoundCloud came, we already did that. So we already got the audience there because we hook up all overseas MCs and singers and those kind of people. And now also we really put out the underground overseas artists through Jazzy Sport. So we export too. You know, we press vinyl in Germany. States and Germany. States before, and then they closing down quickly, and then we change it to the Germany press company. So we ship out commercial products from there.
Mm.
That's easier. And cheaper, you know, shipping fees are pretty weak point about sharing the music distribution.
Yeah, right. Yeah, much easier to actually press the vinyl abroad than to post it from Japan.
Yeah. So the overseas distributor in Euro, UK, easily to buy it, so easy to distribute it without the high cost of shipping fee. And
yeah.
So that was kind of good way of spread the music through the vinyl.
So in that sense, I guess you've always imagined yourselves to as being an international label. That was always the aim?
In that sense, one of the main aim is share the music, put out the music we like, that's it. That means, but do it internationally, it's a fun.
Yeah. Another very busy artist on Jazzy Sport is Grooveman Spot, who is a producer and a DJ who definitely takes a lot of influence from all of that kind of beat scene, MPC type stuff, but also house and soul and R&B. And he's clearly like a big collector, I would say. And he's been DJing since, I think, the early 90s. He's released a lot of records, basically. Tell me a bit about Grooveman Spot and how you met him. What's he like?
He was one of the producer for Gaggle debut album.
Oh, really? He was producing Gaggle, okay.
Gaggle debut album because of they from Sendai City.
Right, they were from Sendai.
Then from they both from Sendai, and then Gaggle wants to ask Grooveman Spot one of the tunes for their album. They know each other well in local. And so I'm down with the idea, so I asked him to produce one track for the Gaggle debut album. So back then, the technology wasn't that good like this, like now, right now. So he came to Tokyo. So to do some studio work. So I invited him to come to Tokyo and they let him stay in my house and do studio work for Gago. So that was when I met him.
What's he like?
He was really cool, nice guy, and he was younger. He was much younger than me, and then Mitsu and Guma Podbeats, it's like beats friends, like both make new beats and then they listen to each other's and check the techniques and that kind of relationship they have. So I respect him, Guma's podcast as well, obviously.
One of his more recent projects is this kind of beat tape series called Resynthesis. And all of the tapes are kind of named after colors. They were kind of a different style. Would it be fair to say that the label is looking to create a kind of timeless sound rather than kind of focusing on new trends or chasing trends?
I don't think he doesn't chase trends at all. He made that series of
resynthesis.
That common word in English?
Not a common word in English, no. Synthesis maybe, but not resynthesis.
Some people don't understand the meaning, right?
It's not really stuff. Yeah. It's definitely obscure.
So that album aimed to basically for the dancers.
Album for dancers, right?
In Japan, dancers is not really well treated, you know. Dancer is always like underground. Some people are really, really good, but you know, dancers always under the surface.
Dancers like always underground, always a bit unfairly treated in some way.
So it's hard to make money with a dance, you know.
Right.
I don't know. In London, same? No?
No, I would say it was probably quite different, really. I mean, definitely in recent years, DJs and clubs have been, well, you know, DJing itself has been one of the main ways for producers to make money. It's, it's definitely the opposite, I would say.
So Koji, Guma's folk himself, used to do dancers. He used to be a dancer, so...
He used to be a dancer?
He was dancers.
Okay.
So he got a special feeling for dancers, so that's why he made that kind of beat series for dancers. He didn't say much about it for a promotion because I made this album for dancers. I think, and he said to me like that. That's why it's only spent on the useful for dance shows and stuff.
Okay, I have some kind of fun quickfire questions for you.
Okay.
Fast questions.
All right.
So, if Jazzy Sport was an animal, what animal would it be?
It's difficult. Fish.
A fish? Any kind of fish?
Not particular.
Just a fish, fine. Any fish. Okay, if Jazzy Sport was a food item, what would it be?
Totally, fish. I like fish and chips.
Also fish, okay. If Jazzy Sport was a season, what would it be?
Winter.
Ah, it's all that skiing.
I like winter, and Masaya love winter too.
Would you rather be up early or out late?
Up early.
Oh, that's a surprising answer. Okay, good.
Nowadays, I don't go to club, so I couldn't go to club, so I up early, like 5 in the morning.
Wow.
Yeah.
Would you rather be in the city or in the country?
Country. I'm done with the city now.
Are you over it?
I should move.
And would you rather be by the sea or in the mountains?
In the mountains.
Right. Skiing, of course. That makes sense. Finally, what was the last record that you bought?
Can.
A classic.
Yeah. That's the last one I got. I haven't heard it yet, you know. It's sealed.
Oh, yeah, beautiful. Are you a big Can fan?
Not at all.
Oh, right. So it's kind of new to you.
Are you?
Oh, yeah, I love Can. Yeah, definitely. That's a great couple of records to be getting into during COVID, I think.
Right. Okay. I knew.
So Jazzy Sport has also released records by Cro-Magnon, and they're like an actual band, a group, a kind of acid jazz group, blending like jazz and soul and hip hop. And I was thinking about how with that kind of link between hip hop and jazz, they remind me a little bit of the way that someone like Kamasi Washington releases on Brainfeeder. You know, it's like it's a jazz group, but on a label that's more usually like an electronic label. And I know that obviously there's this huge and established jazz scene in Japan, like that's big. But is there much crossover, do you think, between fans of jazz and hip hop? Like, is that something that you have tried to nurture more of? Or is there a natural kind of crossover between those fans in Japan?
As for Cro-Magnon, they do rap music before Cro-Magnon.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, like Roots.
Right.
There was an MC and some other players.
Oh, that's amazing. Okay.
Yeah. So we know.
Because the stuff I've heard is very like jazz and loose and
disco
musical.
And We call them Human Disco Band.
Human Disco Band.
So, they are already famous as a hip-hop band. First hip-hop band, like Roots.
Oh, like the Roots, yeah, okay.
So that was not many groups like hip-hop band doing hip-hop, you know?
Yeah.
So they spread, they finish with the group and then they start Cro-Magnon. So we hook them up quickly and they do instrumental kind of music influenced by hip-hop and soul and jazz. They, one of them doing the DJ, Tsuyoshi, the guitar, bass and sampler player, also DJing. He dig a lot and he know a lot of music too. So that's, I can say it's natural things, crossover, anything.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure they've brought their fans with them in that direction as well. And then Takumi from Cro-Magnon has also released a record that's like beautiful, like jazz piano, solo piano, right?
Ah, you into that?
That's really nice, yeah.
You like that? And he kept dreaming, he said to me, like he kept dreaming about make a solo piano album. He could borrow a really vintage Darium piano, so he started making his own solo piano album.
And is that the first time that you've released a kind of pure jazz album?
Yes, thank you. You call it jazz.
Yeah, it is. It can't really be anything else, really, I think. It's,
And he, you should check out his new piano solo album on compilation for Menace in France, Paris label.
Oh, cool.
Menace, it's coming out soon.
You've had a few international artists on the label as well, like Steve Spacek and IG Culture. How has that ended up happening? Like, how would you decide what artists would be a good fit? Would you choose artists who are already well known in Japan, or is it more like you're trying to introduce a Japanese audience to names that might be new to them, or how does it work?
They ask us to put out their music.
Really?
We already got a connection and, you know, I license a lot of broken beats kind of stuff from London.
Right.
But for the X label. So I still got some connection with London people.
Oh, interesting. So you mean like the kind of broken beat earlier noughties people, you're connected to those because you were licensing them?
Yeah. Licensing them, license loads of motion stuff,
right,
basically. And then I gotta go to London. I've been to London for promotion checkup with a music writer. I brought him to the London town to check the broken beat scene and then meet the artist and producer themselves and or something like that. That was when we start using that iChat or something on the Macintosh and send the data and the music and check the demos. And that was happened. That way we get much more closer to the overseas artists like IG and artists you mentioned.
Yeah.
And even the artists from the United States. That makes it easy to collaborate through the internet.
Mm-hmm. You must have been visiting places like Plastic People then, I guess.
Yeah. I've been Plastic People actually with Mitsu and Jav. I don't know, but I've been there three times.
Yeah. What do you think is the hardest part of running the label?
make a profit.
Yeah, okay. Well, why is that? Why is it so difficult?
Because we just don't care about the profit. So.
Music comes first.
Yeah.
Has it got harder over the years or easier to run the label to make a profit?
In between. Sometimes good, sometimes bad.
Tell me about how you've reacted to other changes in the industry, though, because really the music industry has just changed so much in the space of about 20 years. The shift into digital and streaming and away from physical records and from record stores. I wondered if you'd made any predictions or business decisions that turned out to be wrong or that didn't work out. Were there ever any moments like that where you felt that you might have made the wrong decision or a difficult decision?
I just follow the games they play. That's it. Not much. Always new things coming, like a subscription, like a Spotify and iTunes, Apple Music. In Japan, came after from the States and Euro, because all the major label don't sign quickly with those kind of things in Japan. But they offer us from the beginning, even they just set up their own company in Japan, and they offer us like, you do this, you do that. By themselves, like Spotify came through to our office, so you do it. Or maybe they're a fan of us on iTunes. So we just said yes or no to them.
So like, in a way, being a more underground label in Japan gives you access to big tech and music companies in the rest of the world. So like, because you're independent, you've been able to kind of quickly get on board with Spotify and Apple Music and things like that?
Yeah, I think so. And they need some variation of the music when they started in Japan, their business, you know. But, you know, always Japanese major label tend to not to sign them quickly.
Right.
So meanwhile, they headhunting other junk labels and stuff. That's why we are the one. We are one of the easy hunting.
Yeah, right. It's easier for them to make a deal with you than it is to make a deal with the big Japanese major labels. Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. Mm. Well, and then my final question really is about the role of independent labels, because that's changed so much, and I think it will continue to change, because basically now artists can make their own music at home and sell records without needing a label, really. So having said that, I don't think that labels are going anywhere. So what do you think will be the role of independent labels like Jazzy Sport in the future?
That's a tough question. It's happening now. They don't need a label anyway, I think. I feel that way too. If I'm an artist, I don't deal with the label. But the label got flavors and some credits already. So that was only part of the label, I think.
Is there a sense that a label can offer a kind of community? Like, I wonder if the artists on Jazzy Sport maybe hang out with each other and like see each other in real life, and if that's part of what makes it a special label?
Yes. And some people keep dreaming maybe put out their music on some certain label they like. So that's the only role for the labels now. And they can invest, they can press the vinyl and CDs, no more music tools. And maybe that solo artist cannot do such investment.
Yeah, exactly. So you can provide that kind of investment for them and give them some direction when they maybe don't know where.
And the distribution and promotion, that's it. That's why we run other things, you know, like another bouldering gyms. Right now we're building a new bouldering gym in Tokyo.
Oh, wow. Great. You're fully transitioning into a climbing company.
Climbing. Yeah, we are kind of famous in climbing, in the climbing business, I guess.
Great.
It's in downtown Tokyo.
And when will it open?
Middle of September. you should come on Prime.
Yeah, definitely.
Please do. I will invite you for nothing.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Well, in that case, I look forward to finally making it to not just the Jazzy Sport store, but the Jazzy Sport bouldering gym.
It's called the Stone Session.
The Stone Session.
Yeah.
You're definitely the only label I've spoken to so far who has a bouldering gym. So that is completely unique in the world of record.
Yeah, two bouldering gyms.
Two, sorry.
It's okay.
Taro, thank you so much for talking to me about Jazzy Sport.
Thank you,
really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Domo arigato.
You've been listening to Relevant Parties from Carhartt Work in Progress. If you want to dive into more music from the labels in this series, check out the Relevant Parties playlist on Spotify. You can find the link in the show notes. And remember, you can subscribe to Relevant Parties so that you never miss an episode. It's available wherever good podcasts are found. And if you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to leave a rating and a comment on Apple Podcasts. We'd really love to know what you think. So thanks for listening, and join me next time for more stories behind the world's best record labels.